that, dear listeners, was the Bhajan Tutor for this week. It's now time for the next segment in today's Thursday Live. That's Shravanam Mananam Nididhyasanam. And as always, this is Prem from Team Radio Sai. And with me is Brother Hari Shankar. And we are here to continue with the series, the 1991 Summer Course series. As those of you who regularly follow us will know that we completed one discourse last week. We completed the discourse that Swami gave on the 1st of June, 1991. We will be beginning the next discourse, which also happens to be the last discourse in the series. And we will see how beautifully Swami sums up the entire series through this discourse. But before we give you a short summary of what we heard in the previous discourse, hoping that that will lead on to today's discourse, and before we play the clip for this week, let me invite Hari to join all of us too. Saram Hari.
Saram Prem.
And as we were telling even last week, the previous discourse on paper looked small and even topic-wise seemed a little more lighter than the previous discourses, because they were all about some very hardcore Upanishadic concepts, because each one was on an Upanishad. We had three or four discourses on the Prashna Upanishad. So in that sense, this appeared like a simpler discourse, but we know that even when Swami says something lightheartedly, there is something more profound to learn from that. And what can we say about Swami's discourses?
Certainly, so, looks can be deceptive when it comes to Swami's discourses.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's a very beautiful discourse in the sense that, you know, Swami starts off by saying that we all take up some form of sadhana or the other. We all do something to to further our development in the spiritual field. But many times we don't see the effort in fructifying in our everyday life. Swami said, what is the reason? And that's how the discourse starts. And Swami goes on to say, the main thing is that you don't understand what sadhana is in the first place. And that's how Swami goes on to explain what is sadhana. When you transform bad to good, when you transform sorrow to happiness. And interestingly, Swami says, transforming sorrow to happiness does not mean getting rid of sorrow, but it starts with accepting sorrow. Mm-hmm. That's the next part which Swami went on to say. Swami said, you start accepting sorrow. It reminds me of, I think, Abraham Lincoln's quote. He said, don't I destroy my enemies when I make friends of them. Mm-hmm. Right? When Swami says, transform sorrow to happiness, right, it's not negating sorrow or removing sorrow from your life, but you accept sorrow as part of life and accept, in fact, Swami says that accept sorrow as literally the mother of happiness, because happiness comes from sorrow and joy comes from sadness. So you accept the negative side of life as welcomingly as you accept the positive side of life. Swami says it starts with that. And then Swami went on to say that that will give you a mental balance. And I mean, all of this, Swami goes on to say that the importance of this is it all starts in the mind. Swami says all suffering is in the mind, so it's very important that your sadhana deals with the mind and brings balance in your mind. So Swami goes on to say that's why you have to see good and bad equally. And then Swami goes on to make a very beautiful point. He says we have to strike a balance between self-confidence and ego. Swami was saying that every spiritual practice starts with self-confidence, but you should be weary of the fact that it might turn into ego. Mm-hmm. And from there, Swami went on to say that one of the best ways to condition the mind to attain this balance is by doing seva, is by recognizing the fact that the human life is sanctified, and the purpose of the human life itself is to be of service to others. And another way of maintaining this balance in the mind, which will enable us to draw maximum benefit from sadhana, Swami said, it's keeping in mind the threefold path of fear of sin, love of God, and morality in society. And very beautifully, Swami said that it does not mean that you can escape from morality in society just in the pretext of you being a spiritual person. You have to follow the rules of the society, and you should do it with a certain sense of fear of sin, eventually leading on to love for God. From then on, Swami again spoke about equal-mindedness, how, you know, society gives you an opportunity to practice equal-mindedness and acceptance. Mm-hmm. And Swami said it should not be a superficial acceptance or tolerance of others, but it should be a very deep acceptance which comes from believing in the oneness of the Atma. And from there Swami so beautifully led on to that, how do you establish yourself in that Advaita. And then very beautifully Swami said that this principle that you're trying to hold on to will be tested in life.
Mm-hmm.
By the many people who will come and challenge you, and there will be many a fall. But take it all positively and take it all sportively as a means by which you're being tested and by means by which you can examine yourself.
Nice.
And Swami gave that example of Adi Shankara.
Mm.
And Swami went on to say that in this case, you know, the Lord Himself comes, but whatever is the obstacle you face, believe it to be a form of God. Whoever comes and becomes an obstacle in your life, you look at him as a person who is coming to teach you a lesson. See, everybody has a teacher. And of course, Swami ended by saying that, you know, the importance of spending days like how they have spent the last 12 days, Swami said, in the summer course, the way you have spent. And Swami beautifully sang that poem where he said, what makes days good days or holy days? And then he said, the day when true devotees gather and remember God, that is a good day. The day when you assuage the grief of the poor and treat them as your brothers with love, that is a good day. The day when you contemplate on God and feed your servants with tasty food, that is a good day. The day when great persons come into our midst and regale us with stories of the Lord. Such are the days that are real days. Swami says other days are, I think Swami used a word which literally meant days of death.
Taddinam.
Right? Taddinam. Swami says days of death. Swami used that. And in a sense, completing the whole concept of sadhana, Swami said that as much as possible, fill your life with such days. And when you fill it with such days, the entire discourse, whatever Swami spoke, was, you will see it manifesting in your own life.
Right? And the key appears to be the mind, you know. So the mind seems to be standing at that frontier, no, between like the soul and the external experience of the world.
Exactly.
And as Swami used to say, it's like a key, right? You turn it right and you turn it left. So you're either locked into the world or you're able to lock into the Atma. So the key is the mind.
Right.
And so a lot of these practices, etc., what we saw last time, that essentially is like to, you know, to be able to actually watch what is happening within the mind.
Mm.
Right. And a lot of us do that, you know. It's very like, say somebody is dieting, right? The best advice somebody, I mean, you can give, of course, a lot of other diets, but to avoid a particular food. Now, what happens actually is the desire comes up so quickly, right? Something mm-hmm. triggers the, say you want a chocolate or you want a burger, okay? Something triggers in the mind a memory of that, an intense desire. And most of the time we see that, you know, the reason we get into trouble is because we follow very quickly that desire, because we think that the mind is supreme.
Right.
And with most, you can draw this analogy with several other scenarios that take place. Like say somebody triggers an angry reaction within us, right? Mm. So somehow we hold it as true that whatever the mind is telling us to do right then is the thing to do.
Right.
So the practice of meditation is therefore to watch the mind, because then you'll see what it is. Like as Swami very clearly puts it, it's like a bundle of thoughts.
Mm.
And that thought which arose is like one among many. Right. And so if you can watch that sea of thoughts and then choose which one you want to now act on, like that is the key, as right. Swami says.
And it all starts with that separation, which Swami would say, yeah. You're not the mind. Because I think in the 1990 series, Swami had mentioned this when there was this discourse on freedom. And Swami was saying that there is nothing like absolute freedom. And a very beautiful point that Swami was driving then was, you know, what do we call the lack of freedom or lack of independence? If someone has to tell me what I have to do, and I constantly keep doing what I'm told to do, you know, that is what we say that is a lack of independence, a lack of freedom. So the moment you separate yourself from the mind, and now you think that I'm constantly acting under the influence of the mind, Swami says you'll realize that following whatever you feel like doing is not actually freedom, but it's a form of slavery.
Exactly.
And real freedom is when you are able to be above the mind and control the mind and say that, no, this I will follow and this I will not follow. Swami said that is when actually you're in freedom and not when you're allowed to do whatever you want to do.
Yes. Even as like Swami used to take the opportunity every Independence Day to remind us of the distinction between what we take as Swarajya, that is the freedom of the nation.
Right.
Swarajya, like, that is the real, the kingdom of the self.
Right.
Swami used to say that is the true freedom.
Right. Right.
So he used to remind us constantly of this distinction between
right.
what the word Swarajya, what we normally take it to mean and what it truly means.
Right. And this, of course, that the suffering is always in the mind is something which Swami has repeated on many occasions.
Yeah.
In fact, I was once hearing about one of the monks in the Ramakrishna order, where he had some kind of infection on his finger and it was neglected and became big. So eventually they had to perform a very small surgery on the finger. So the doctor comes and finger or leg, I forgot now. So the doctor comes and says that this is the surgery, this procedure has to be done. So permit us to give you local anesthesia. So this person says that, no, I don't need it. I can control my mind so as to not feel the pain, he says. So then he goes into a meditative mood and then he tells the doctor, you can go ahead with the operation. And surprisingly, the doctor does the operation. There is not even a twitch on his face to show any kind of sensation, forget fear, forget pain. And the entire surgery is done and the doctor bandages and goes away. And the next morning, the doctor comes to examine. And very casually, the doctor, removes the bandage and this monk screams out in pain. And the doctor is surprised. He said, the surgery that I performed yesterday was at least 100 times more painful than me removing this bandage. And you did not have any kind of, reaction to that, but now you are shouting. He said, but you didn't give me time to prepare. He said, had you told me, then I would have prepared my mind.
Right.
So literally saying that it is possible, it is not that it's very outlandish. It is possible for a person who's manage that kind of mind control, and of course we've seen it in the case of Swami too.
That's what is coming to that. Although that sounds like a fable, we have seen it with our own eyes. I remember one particular instance. This was just when the pain that we saw in Swami's leg or difficulties for Swami to walk, that had just begun manifesting itself. So I recall that one morning, when Swami came for darshan, he was literally bent over.
Mm-hmm.
He was not walking straight. Right, he is literally bent over, and this was at a time, we were sitting there as a group, some of us, because Swami had told the previous evening that he would speak to us. And when we saw Swami in that condition, I had written it off. I said, definitely Swami is not going to call. He's come for darshan because the devotees, he will not let them down. But, we can definitely pray to Swami that you can call us some other day. You will not believe Prem, like nothing changed. He had given his word that he'll call. And he just casually called us, he sat inside, spoke to us, and one has to be really aware of just how much pain Swami was going through. But his ability to just, stand for his word, the duty that he has assigned himself, right, he's taken on. Simply amazing sight, At no point of time would you have believed that this is this was the same person who was walking literally bent over, right? And sitting there casually talking to us, chatting with us, and joking with us. It was an unbelievable sight. It was a clear demonstration to us, like, how one can separate oneself from one's physical condition or even a mental condition and stand for something very, very big, for something very huge. And I think that's a lesson for us. See, we do not all stand as avatars in the way we are right now. But in our own little ways, supposing any duty, any big thing that we have taken up in our own lives, like if we can stop being victims of our physical or mental conditions, right? Like somebody is sorrowful, something bad happens, somebody says something and that triggers a reaction, right? And we are all so consumed by that because for us that is everything. What the mind is going through, for us that is everything. But for Swami, it was like the bigger purpose that was everything. Right? So that's why he could quickly step into that zone and the rest was small, insignificant details, the little pains, whatever he was going through.
Right. But I mean, that's the thing. The demonstration was done in front of us.
Yeah.
But it's important not to say that, oh, Swami was divine. And,
yeah.
And that is why Swami would very often say that, you know, this has got nothing to do with using divine powers. Yeah. It's just, I mean, having a certain amount of control over your own body and simply just detaching yourself from the body and mind.
Good.
You get a fair bit of, in fact, many of these sportsmen would say that, you know, when they're playing something. Many times they injure themselves,
yeah.
And they're so involved in the game they don't realize it.
Correct.
It's not until later that they find there's a cut or there's a bruise, and then it starts burning.
Yeah.
So when you're involved in something that you're doing, that's something which all of us can experience. It's not something very extraordinary.
Yeah, psychology has a term for it. It's called flow.
Right, exactly.
The phenomenon called flow. Right. When you're so absorbed in what you're doing, that separation between you and the world literally disappears. Right. Right? So that is the object of
the flip side
meditation.
Of that is when you're so absorbed in your pain, you don't realize how small it is. And
yeah.
You're so consumed by it.
Right.
I think we'll go to the next discourse. This is the 13th discourse in that series, the final one, as I said. This discourse is entitled Dharma and Indian Spirituality, and precisely that's what it is. This is another discourse that we've done retranslation to, and when we are doing that, our heart goes out in sympathy to the translator who stands beside Swami, because it's not at all easy. Swami's Telugu is, of course, very, very pure, and it's sometimes very difficult to follow, because the other reason is some of these words which Swami uses, like Vijnana, Shastra, it's very difficult to understand what is the word that you have to use in that place. Would you say Vidya as education? Would you call it learning? Will you say science? Will you say philosophy? Of course, we've done a retranslation. We've done our best. Hopefully, it captures what Swami is saying. But clearly, a translator standing next to Swami, I mean, in that presence, first of all, and to be able to deliver the translation accurately, it's a real big task. And I think all translators have definitely done a great job. But this is, of course, our retranslation of that discourse. So we'll listen to the first part or first clip in that discourse.
Parama Pavanamaina భరతావనియందు పరమ పావనమైన భరతావనియందు సహనమన్నది మనకు చక్కదనము వ్రతములన్నిటియందు వన్నెగాంచిన ఎట్టి ఘన సత్యశీలమే కఠిన తపము వ్రతములన్నిటి అందు వన్నెగాంచిన ఎట్టి ఘన సత్యశీలమే కఠిన తపము మధుర భావం బేది మధుర భావం బేది మన దేశమందన్నా మాతృభావము కన్నా మాన్యమెద్ది మధుర భావం బేది మన దేశమున కన్నా మాతృభావం బేది ప్రాణంబు కంటెను మానంబె ఘనమను మన దేశ నీతిని మంటగల్పి ప్రాణంబు కంటెను మానంబే ఘనమను మన దేశ నీతిని మంటగల్పి నేటికి చిరి పరదేశ నీతులరసి నేటికి చిరి పరదేశ నీతులరసి వేసే విచిత్ర స్వేచ్ఛమను విచ్చుకత్తే ఔరా ఔరా ఏమందు భారత పాలనందు ఏమందు భారత పాలనందు ఏనుగెట్టుల తన బల మెరుగలేదో అతులే అయినారు మన భారతీయులు నేడు.
In the most sacred land of Bharat, patience is the true wealth. Among all austerities, the shining jewel of truth is the highest penance. If one asks what is the sweetest feeling in this country, nothing more is sweeter than mother's love. The country which considered honor greater than life itself, its morality is being turned to ashes. Our country is no longer the same due to the adaption of foreign ideals. Unbridled freedom is a dangerous sword. Alas, what has happened to India? As an elephant is unaware of its own strength, such is the state of our countrymen today.
Sakala yatnamuladi satatam bucheyuta sakala yatnamuladi సతతంగుచేయుట అఖిల విద్యలు నేర్చి అధికుడగుట భూమి పండించుట భూచక్ర మేలుట భూమి పండించుట భూచక్ర మేలుట కొలువు చేయుట పొట్ట కూటి కొరకే కొలువు చేయుట పొట్ట కూటి కొరకే ఘనముగా బహుబాధ కడగండ్లు పడనేల పొట్ట కోటము క్రిమి పశు పక్షి మృగాదులు బ్రతుకలేదే కాన వాంఛించకయే తృప్తి గలుగునంచు గట్టిగా తెలిసి గమ్యంబు చేరకున్నా ఇతర జీవుల కన్నా అరయ నరుడు అధముడే కాని పరికింప అధికుడగునా.
Performing charity and sacrifices ceaselessly, acquiring knowledge and power, harnessing crops, ruling over lands, such actions are merely for filling the stomach. Why suffer in so many ways? Don't worms, birds and beasts live for the stomach as well? Knowing that satisfaction can be got without worldly joys, if man does not strive to reach the goal, he is only inferior to other living beings. How can he be superior?
Vidyarthulara.
Students.
Sakala vidyala sarame bharatiya vaijnanam.
The essence of all learning is the knowledge of India.
Okkokka deshamu okkokka vidhamainatuvanti yokka vijnanamulu kaligi untundi.
In each country, a certain form of knowledge is prevalent.
Anni vidhamulaina vijnanamunandu kudanu neeti nijayati satyamu tyagamu sahanamu ityadi sadgunamulu samamuga koodi untuntayi.
In all these forms of knowledge, morality, integrity, truth, sacrifice, tolerance and such other good qualities are equally present.
Kanaki vidya భారతీయ విద్యా వికారం నందు విజ్ఞానము నందు ఆచారము సాంప్రదాయము మతము కళ చదువు ఈ ఐదింటి యొక్క అంగములతో కూడి ఉంటుంది.
బట్ ఇన్ ద సిస్టమ్ ఆఫ్ ఎడ్యుకేషన్ అండ్ సైన్సెస్ ఆఫ్ ఇండియా ద ఫైవ్ లింబ్స్ ఆఫ్ కస్టమ్స్ ట్రెడిషన్ రిలిజియన్ ఆర్ట్ అండ్ ఎడ్యుకేషన్ ఆర్ ఇన్క్లూడెడ్.
ఇట్టి పరిపూర్ణమైనటువంటి యొక్క విజ్ఞానతత్వాన్ని ఈనాటి విజ్ఞులు విస్మరిస్తూ వచ్చారు.
Such a comprehensive philosophy of education has been forgotten by the scholars of today.
ఈ విజ్ఞానమును కొలచు కొలతబద్ద ధర్మమే.
The instrument which can measure this knowledge is righteousness.
ధర్మము జగత్తులో ఏ విధముగా అభివృద్ధి గొంచునో దానిని పురస్కరించుకుని విజ్ఞానము కూడాను అభివృద్ధి నొందుతుంది.
డిపెండింగ్ ఆన్ హౌ రైచియస్నెస్ ఫ్లరిషెస్ ఇన్ ద వరల్డ్ నాలెడ్జ్ ఫ్లరిషెస్ టూ.
ఈ ధర్మ విజ్ఞానము అభివృద్ధికి సరియైనటువంటి ఆస్పాదము దేశం యొక్క క్షేమము, దేశం యొక్క సౌభాగ్యము.
ది నేషన్స్ వెల్ఫేర్ అండ్ ప్రాస్పెరిటీ ఈజ్ ద ప్రిసైజ్ టెస్టమెంట్ ఫర్ ద థ్రైవింగ్ ఆఫ్ ధర్మ అండ్ నాలెడ్జ్.
దేశము సుక్షేమంగా సౌభాగ్యంగా ఉండవలనన్న ధర్మ విజ్ఞానములు అత్యవసరం.
ఇఫ్ ద కంట్రీ ఈజ్ టు బి సెక్యూర్ అండ్ ప్రాస్పెరస్, రైచియస్నెస్ అండ్ నాలెడ్జ్ ఆర్ వెరీ మచ్ ఎసెన్షియల్.
That was the first clip in that discourse, and I think Swami sang three different padyams together, and the essence of those padyams is of course the honor of the Bharatiya tradition, what it stands for, and of course as the title of the discourse suggests, about dharma itself, and two distinct concepts. But I think eventually as the discourse goes through, Swami is going to connect both of them and say and tell us how it is both related.
Right. And very first poem, the first verse, as you said, you know, there are actually, it looks like there are four poems, four padyams, right, which Swami has spoken, recited. The first one, we can you know, take them almost, you know, verse by verse, right? So the first one, it highlights the values or the virtues that Swami expects from all of us, and of course the students, and he spells them out, that in this land of Bharat, right, and he says it is patience which is the greatest virtue, and then we have truth, right, among all sadhanas or disciplines, as Swami says, among all sadhanas it is truth that Swami gives the highest pedestal, saying it is the highest penance. And the virtue of love, which for Swami was, you know, so very important. And honor, and Swami said this honor, like the Swami used to say, swabhimanamu, that, right, that quality is more important than life itself.
Mm.
And for Swami, you know, the word Bharat itself, it, as we know, it had that special significance. Swami would say, of all countries, what is so unique about this country? And Swami would say that is there in the name itself.
Mm-hmm.
When you say Bharat, Bharati, Swami used to say, like, this is the land where people, they are attracted towards the light.
Right.
That they look towards enlightenment. No? That so the people who have that passion, that love for enlightenment. So Swami used to say, in that land, right, in that particular land, these are the virtues we must look for. Patience. Then we have truth, we have the love, and finally honor itself.
Right.
And it's, I think, like, if we can spend some time on each one, right, like patience, like what is, we can individually dwell, you know, if we had the time on,
right,
what do you mean by patience, what do you mean by truth. But I suppose that in the rest of the discourse, Swami will be delineating on each one of these.
Right. But as you pointed out, the four distinct qualities Swami is talking about, patience, truth, and love like that of a mother. I think that's an important description that Swami is giving, because Swami is suggesting that sort of a selfless love, a mother's love, Swami says. And then honor, again, as you said, that's something which Swami is going to talk extensively in the discourse, the rest of the discourse. But clearly saying that, you know, as you said, so many times you've heard Swami speaking very highly of Bharat. And I often say this, you know, I speak highly of India, and I'm sure most of us speak highly of India. But that is out of the feeling that this is my country.
Right.
Like, this is my land. And and Swami would say that everybody has to be patriotic. I still recall one of the first awareness classes which we had, where the teachers started this topic of patriotism. And he started asking, why do you love your country, or why are you patriotic? So each one was supposed to get up and explain. Then it came to one of the boys, and he got up and said, sir, but I'm Nepali. Said, I'm from Nepal. And he said, that's fine, but you can still love your country, and patriotism is just love for your country. And then he went on to say that, you know, it is all based on the fact that it is my country. It all starts from that. But when Swami says that Bharat is a crest jewel, it's a land which stands out, there are certain qualities which attract God to this land, and you know, he has a choice to make, and he has made the choice of coming to this country. And what are those qualities? And I think Swami is very beautifully and clearly saying, it is patience, truth, love, and honor.
Yes.
A sense of honor is what defines this land.
Yeah.
In the next padim, which Swami spoke about, Swami tells, I mean, again, a very important point. Swami says that each land has a certain set of values, certain set of learnings which it focuses on. And the same manner, even India has its own values. India has its own fields of knowledge in which the Bharatiyas of ancient times have chosen that these are the fields of knowledge which need to be given importance. But when this mixing happens, you know, we speak so much about globalization. And Swami says that is when, if you're not grounded well in your own values, then you get a little bit unsettled because of this influx from outside.
Right, yeah. Because there is a certain timelessness to what the Upanishads speak about. Like the, so they are not, you know, edicts as to do this, do not do this. So those, if when we go through the Upanishads, they never speak about do's and don'ts. And whereas do's and don'ts, they may change with, you know, society.
Right.
I'd say, for example, at one point of time, it was a value, so to say, that, you know, a wife must faithfully serve her husband, you know. So that in our present times would not be seen as a value, right?
Right.
It would be perceived as the exact opposite of that. So those do's and don'ts, they will change from time to time. But what the values that the Upanishads, the values that Sanatana Dharma actually speak about, right, at the core of it, they come from an understanding of who we truly are. And that is timeless. That
right.
doesn't change. And that is why these virtues, when we speak about patience, truth, love and honor, honor especially, right? Like, you know, when we talk, it could be spoken of as the exact opposite of, say, humility. You know, there's a very easy connotation, or it's very easy to move from honor to pride, right? There's a very
right.
thin line separating the two, or from honor to arrogance. You could see it as that, right? So, where does that come from? You know, for Swami, it doesn't come from the achievements or the power or the pelf, money that you hold. Honor is based on the very simple fact that you are divinity, and that is it, right? There is nothing else. And so that honor is something that will prevent you from doing several things which would demean your status as somebody or your true nature.
Right.
And that is the honor which Swami is speaking about. Swabhimanam. Again, the word, main word over there being swa, the,
exactly.
the self, right? So Swami used to say abhimanam on the self, the you know, that pride of being, so to speak, divinity itself, right? So that, those are the values that spring out. And we should know the source of the spring is this, you know, that the Upanishads hold each person as being like complete, as being perfect, divinity itself.
Right.
And it comes from there. So these are so very timeless, right? And they will stand, you know, if you look at the Sanatana Dharma, it has withstood mutations, it has withstood like several interpretations by people who practice the religion, by people who are outside the religion.
Critique the religion.
Critiqued it, and it has stood the test of time. It has even gone through several, you know, churnings or purges of itself, right, to rid itself of the several layers of interpretation that grew over the base, right? So all of that has happened, right? And that's why Swami is definitely dismayed by that, you know, when we blindly adopt something from a different country, which, as you very rightly pointed out, is perfectly okay in that setting. And for that setting it works. But when you mix up the two, you know, say a Western values with the Indian values, right? So that's when a lot of confusion begins to arise.
Right.
For a lot of us. Right?
And again, this is one point which Swami often reiterates whenever he's speaking about Indian culture.
Hmm.
He says this unbridled freedom is a dangerous word.
That is the main
point.
Yeah.
And there's another Samukos discourse where Swami says, you know, the ideas of liberty are eating into the foundation of Indian idea of duty.
Correct.
Because that's something which Swami would so often say, it's not that the idea of liberty itself is bad.
Yeah.
But to focus on that as almost like the fundamental right that every human should have. And when that's right opposite of honor.
Mm.
Because honor is literally like a burden that you carry.
Yeah.
Right? You are literally chained to that feeling of when Swami would say that name is very important.
Mm.
The kirti or the fame that you have in the world is very important. I still recall in Trai Vrindavan when Swami was speaking to us once. He said, you know, boys, you don't have to do anything. There are so many generations of students who have been students in this university. They have got a good name. When you go out, just protect that name. And that itself is a big burden, right?
True.
You know, you have associated yourself with a name so pure. And that feeling of, you know, I should not bring a bad name to this university, to Swami.
Yeah.
That feeling of honor itself is good enough to ensure that you stick to the right path throughout your life.
Yeah.
And that is why honor is important. It's not about, and the different distinction between honor and pride, where, you know, pride becomes a means of hurting others or harming yourself. I think that's where it becomes dangerous. But same pride can be used to ensure that you are sticking to the right path. You are making the right, you're doing the right discrimination through every step in life.
Yeah.
Then it is honor which needs to be upheld and celebrated.
Yeah, because the Indian value is definitely something that it is not intuitive. Like if you are told that freedom is found by being yoked to duty.
Right. Right.
And that is so, it's a difficult concept for somebody to gather. And if you look at the reason is the moment you say you're yoked to duty, what comes up in mind is sacrifice of everyday pleasures.
Right.
And it does happen. Like anybody who takes on a certain duty, like the other day we, you know, somebody like say Elon Musk,
mm-hmm.
right now. So he's at the frontier of so many developments in technology.
Right.
And, you know, we're all aware, you know, how the solar power, the hyperloop, all of these, he's investing so much time into, like, now space travel, like developing such cutting edge technology that he says that I therefore do not have the time to lead an ordinary, you know, family life. He's tried it, it didn't work. So the thing is that when you're yoked to something, you naturally will give up certain things, right? And it is always a trade-off. So that is what the mind resists, right? That for a greater cause, you might have to therefore give up certain things. And that resistance is now, it's kind of moved to a different realm itself. And people are now so more individualistic,
right?
Whereas society calls for you to, if a society has to move harmoniously, it calls for you to therefore sacrifice some amount of freedom for that, for the wheels of society to move smoothly.
Right.
But that, I was reading an essay the other day, that how this streak of individualism, right, this, that value of individualism is now causing people to lose that empathy. Right, for each other. And that is why slowly we are seeing that the values of even like truth and honesty. So all of these, how we've been mentioning over the last few weeks, that we have kind of crossed that line of scrupulousness, unscrupulousness rather, right? That the reason being this individualistic kind of feeling that I stand on my own, right? And completely I need not stick to any of the dictas of society, right? So that feeling is an individualistic feeling. Whereas when you come to something like India, in fact, Swami will be talking about, listen to the epics of the son of Sanatan Dharma. What stands out is essentially your duty, right? What needs to be done, which may be so totally against what you feel is the right thing to be done, right? So that kind of conflict is what we are seeing today in Indian society, and that is what Swami is lamenting, you know, that something like a treasure is there, you know, right there for your picking, and yet we look out, you know, to the West, and we start importing those values. Those values work very fine, you know, where they are born and organically they have grown, right? But when you try to mix up the two, is where you have a lot of trouble.
Two things. When you were talking about that essay, I was wondering, you know, when you say that individuality is actually stifling out our sympathy.
Yeah.
I don't know, I was given to think that it's the other way around.
Mm-hmm.
That strong sense of individuality and a person can be what he or she wants to be
yeah.
is going so strong that I think it is leading to misplaced sympathy.
Right.
If somebody is making a wrong choice, we tend to sympathize with that person instead of saying that it's yeah. wrong.
Absolutely.
Right. It's leading to the same thing. It's leading mm-hmm. to the same thing of a dip in morality and dip in the social order in that sense.
Yeah.
But that misplaced sympathy, you know, when you know that, you would see sometimes, you know, we've gone through these discourses, Swami is very firm about some things,
mm.
which today a liberal citizen probably will not take such a firm stand.
True.
And that's why when we look at Swami, we find, when you hear some of Swami's words, we feel that, hey, Swami is a bit harsh on this. But actually Swami is saying that, you know,
yeah.
this is the firmness with which you deal with, because I know this is the ability that is there in the human mind to right. take such firm stands and stop yourself from, you know, feeling sorry for yourself and allow yourself some of these excesses.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Like being allowed, for example, the value called defer to your elders or respect your elders mm-hmm. is now would be the exact opposite of what an individualistic person would
right.
be. Right.
Right.
So that is a value which has come down over the ages, and there are, you know, pros and cons. Mm-hmm. But what people, I think the confusion that arises in people's mind is that, you know, that there is a path or a formula to happiness, right? And somehow they feel, okay, this has not worked, so now let's mm-hmm. try this. But that was the essence of the right. previous discourse, that they are all going to come mm-hmm. in, it's a package, like right. happiness and sad sorrow mm-hmm. will come as a package, right?
So, and Swami says patience is one of the virtues which
yeah.
you start off with.
Yeah.
And going back to what you refer to about the nations being different, I think Swami, after the Padyam also, Swami refers to that.
Mm-hmm.
Each country has its individuality.
Exactly.
But the beauty is, Swami says, whatever is the field of learning,
mm.
it comes with a certain amount of emphasis on ethics, on morality,
yeah.
on some of these values. I think the acronym which Swami has given for manager,
mm.
If I'm not wrong, N stands for nature of nations. Or
nature
something
of
like,
nations.
Right?
Yes.
I think in that Swami makes this point very clearly. He says that what works in one nation
yeah.
will not necessarily work in another nation, and you have to be wary of this idea of trying to enforce it on another nation.
Like a one-size-fits-all,
right.
doesn't work.
Yeah. And I think that's something which is very important. And mm-hmm. Swami would tell this to the management students, that you have to study the society where you mm. wish to implement your ideas.
True.
Right? And it should, in a way, boost the values in the society and not erode them.
Yeah.
And Swami was, after saying that morality, ethics, truth, sacrifice, and qualities such as forbearance are there in all types of education, Swami said, when you come to the Indian system, the Bharatiya tradition of education, it comprises, along with that, five limbs of acharam, which is behavior, culture, or sampradayam, or you can say tradition, more than culture, I think tradition would be a more apt word there, and religion, art, and knowledge.
Yeah.
Where Swami is saying that even a scientific education should account for all of these two. I think that's a very interesting thing, because most of this, if you talk about behavior, if you talk about religion, it's about a community attribute more than an individual attribute. Whereas you talk about truth, you talk about forbearance, that is more of an individual value. So Swami, I think, is suggesting that your education should not only give you these individual values, but should also enable you to live a better life in society, have the ability to, you know, take along tradition over generations and embrace religion. Religion in the sense of the society's way of living,
yeah.
rather than religion as we see it today.
Right. And it's a beautiful point that Swami makes, you know, that when you're talking about the essence of, Swami is saying, yeah, sciences and education, the essence is culture and spirituality. And in fact, he goes on to say that if you look at the different types of education there are, you know, let's just take, say, the pursuit of science itself. Take that in isolation and study the sentence Swami says that morality, ethics, truth, sacrifice and forbearance are present in all these types of education.
Right.
And it is so very easy, therefore, for an educator to actually point out.
Mm-hmm.
Like the scientific method is actually a method for pursuing truth,
mm-hmm.
where you do not accept, you know, at any point of time the absence of rigor, right? Or the pursuit of philosophy, the pursuit of logic. You take any particular science, right? Mm-hmm. There is always the ultimate truth is what is being sought after. And so there is no, you cannot, you know, compromise at any particular point saying that, okay, let me falsify this here or that here.
Like, right.
Or plagiarism, right? Mm-hmm. So there are ethics. There is, you know, that the sacrifice, of course, is definitely involved. The pursuit of truth, all of these are so very present.
Right.
Right. That, therefore, it is there, you know, the educator can always take the opportunity to enhance or fortify these values.
Point out even, these values to the student.
Exactly. Even through the medium of education.
Right.
We need not, you know, like in present society, religion sometimes, you know, is something that may put off people.
Hmm.
Right. So, even in such a society, it is perfectly, Swami is pointing out the path that even the secular education can be used right. to demonstrate these values.
Exactly. And we've said this many times. Swami would say that education should never be removed from values.
Yeah.
And just this one point where Swami is saying truth is a concept which is spoken of in any form of learning, any form of, as yeah. you said, you know, even scientific learning.
Yeah.
It's the very basis. It's the fulcrum around which the idea of science itself is built.
Yeah.
But when Swami speaks about Indian culture and Swami saying that Indian tradition of learning, he says even the acharam is becoming important. Probably a mix of these two. You know, you should be truthful, but the other verse which Swami would often quote, you know, satyam bruyat, prayam bruyat. Yes, you have to be truthful, but if you bring this concept or this value of truth in everyday life, in the society, then the way you practice it actually gets modified.
Right.
It's not about just blatantly sticking to truth,
yeah.
but it needs to undergo a certain form of modification when it comes to behavior in society.
Correct.
I think beautiful. That is what it means, probably Swami suggesting it, when you bring that scientific knowledge and this cultural knowledge yeah. together.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Right. You know, like somebody was pointing out that when it comes to something like this, they would say that the system in America is something that, you know, very beautiful about how you can be so straight about the thing that you want to say,
mm-hmm.
but at the same time you need not say it in a way that hurts the opposite person.
Mm-hmm.
And one classic example would be like supposing somebody is wearing shoes and they walk into your house, mm-hmm. like you wouldn't say, oh, take off your shoes or don't walk in like that. Like, you can instead ask a question called is it all right for you to wear shoes inside the house or something, you know, that in a very oblique manner
right.
Point to certain behaviors that are not acceptable, right? So that way, you know, we have satyam bruyat priyam bruyat and na bruyat satyam apriyam. Like it is not said in a way that it is unpleasant.
In fact, I think we made a reference to this. One of the Korai discourses, when Swami is talking to students, he says this.
Mm.
You know, especially he was teaching the students about manners in the dining hall.
Right.
And Swami is saying that sometimes when you are eating, they might come and serve you dishes, you might not like some things.
Mm.
Swami would say that you don't make faces while you're eating, right? The host should not feel that.
Yeah.
You've been put through some discomfort. And then Swami went on to say, see, this is an aspect you can learn from the Westerners.
Yeah.
You know, Swami says that. Yeah. See, if you serve them something which they don't like, they will say, it's nice, but I'm good. Swami is saying that. You know, they have a very polite way of saying that, I'm good, I don't want more, but it's nice. I think, and Swami was saying that is an aspect you can all learn from the way the Westerners conduct themselves.
Sure.
There were, I think, one or two more Padhims which Swami spoke about. The reason why we're not going into that is I think that needs a little more time. But the next time when we're coming back to this discourse, we'll start with that, apart from even summarizing what Swami has said. So dear listeners, thank you for joining us. We started a little late today because of the other files being a little longer than usual. But thank you for joining us, and do join us again next week too. In a short while from now, you'll be joined by Brother Bishu for his last segment of today's Thursday Live, the Vahini Satsang. But we'll be back with you next Thursday at 7:30. Thank you. Happy listening.